Hey guys, what's up? It's Sarah from the Creative Exchange. Welcome to another episode. This is a very, very special episode because one, it is the first one, if you're listening to this and you want to view the video version, I'm actually posting it to Patreon instead of YouTube now. You can check that out. I'll leave the link in the description below. But I saved it for this episode because we have someone really special. It's Jack Conti. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Because you're the CEO of Patreon.
That's right.
But not just the CEO of Patreon. You're so many dashes. So can you explain to the audience what you do? What's your typical day like?
Yeah. So I'm co-founder and CEO of Patreon. Started the company 5 years ago with my freshman year roommate, Sam Yam. For the last 10 years, I've been a professional creator, a YouTuber and musician. I've been, making my living as a YouTuber, I guess, since 2009 is when
you were on the platform when it was just starting up.
Yeah. I was like uploading videos like 2007 and, Pomplamoose kind of like hit in 2009. So yeah, I remember YouTube when like the interface looked more like MySpace than it does like YouTube.
Insane. Yeah. And I was watching some of your videos last night, researching, and my mind was blown when I discovered that you weren't just Patreon CEO, but you were half of Pomplamoose with your lovely, beautiful wife, Natalie. And that was like popping off since you guys started. I mean, some of your early covers, you were in the center of this crazy music culture of YouTube of like covers and the cool. How would you describe the style of your covers to begin with? Because I want people to understand like who you guys, maybe just Google them guys, but like the style of, singing, but then having multiple instruments and the like cropped rectangles and stuff. That was all of YouTube, I feel like, for a few years.
Yeah. I mean, we were dogmatic about it. We named the format. We called it a video song. And we had rules. And I was kind of inspired by like some of the like 60s and 70s filmmaking and like the rules that they had. I forgot what it's called, Dogma 41 or something like that. Some like filmmaking techniques where they like wouldn't use unnatural lighting. So like when you got to set, you could only shoot in daylight essentially. And they like no costumes. So the characters had to just like wear like whatever. Anyway, I was really inspired by like that type of like rulemaking for your work. So our rules were like very simple. It was two things. It was like, if you hear it, if you're listening to the song, if you hear it, at some point you see it. So everything that you get to hear, you get to see. No magic tricks, not hiding any noise or any sound, because we made like a lot of cool sounds and we wanted to show people how we made them. And then the second rule is no lip syncing. So if you're looking at a person singing the lyric, that's the actual take of the person actually singing. Or if you see a snare hit, that is the snare hit that we used in the song. And I like doing that because for me, at least as an audio engineer, as a producer, like I listen to Radiohead and all my favorite bands and I'm like, it felt so out of reach because I feel like such geniuses. And I wanted to kind of demystify some of that and make it more accessible and like bring music to people in a way that they hadn't seen music before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some of the biggest ones were like Lady Gaga's Telephone. I think that had 10 million views when I looked at it, and like Single Ladies and all of those cover music videos. When I watched those, I was so triggered because I recognized Natalie immediately. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, I know this face, whether it was from MySpace or just me surfing YouTube 9 years ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And also the thing that triggered me with you is like the glitchy kind of like quick cuts of you playing drums or just being crazy on an instrument. And it's such a cool style. And I think it really formed these few years on YouTube of music and cover videos and original songs. I mean, you guys made original songs that would hit millions, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, we still do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're releasing a music video a week still. We put out a lot of original songs and, actually our most played song on Spotify. I think a lot of people think of us as a cover band, but our second most played song on Spotify is actually an original. We put out as many originals as we do covers. It's literally 50-50.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so crazy. Mm-hmm. And one of the videos that I did watch. It was one of Natalie's videos, and I think it was on her channel. And you know how now YouTube organizes comments like now of what's relevant?
Yeah.
So it was you commenting from 9 years ago on your video.
Yeah.
And you're probably like, oh my God, Sarah, you're such a stalker. But I was doing my homework last night. And the comment was like, oh my God, that was recorded at my place. Good job, Natalie. Awesome, or whatever. And it's cool to see how maybe that relationship formed via YouTube or whatever. But when you guys formed Pomplamoose, were you guys just friends at the time? And then it formed into something more? So I met my boyfriend on YouTube.
Yeah.
So there's a whole history of that on YouTube for us too. So I'm so fascinated by like just relationships that are formed creatively on the internet.
So Natalie and I actually met 2 years before Pomplamoose formed. We met in college. She was opening for a band that, that I was playing in at the time. And, for me, it was like love at first sight. Like she was on stage. She's gorgeous, singing like these really weird, intricate melodies with these wonderful bass lines. It was this amazing counterpoint. She was such like an incredible ear. It was so clear to me. And I was like, it was done. I was like head over heels. And then we started dating and we started trying to make music together, and it was too much at once. Like it failed, and we actually ended up like breaking up for a couple months.
No way.
Yeah. Because it was just like to like work on music and to start dating and like to have that vulnerability and to form that relationship. That's freaking hard. It's hard to pour out your soul to somebody like in a song and lyrics. Mm-hmm. And it's also hard to like start dating a person and getting to know them. And it just kind of, it was too much. It ended up failing. Then we got back together and we're like, okay, we're just going to be together. And we're going to be a couple because we loved each other and we wanted to like build a strong foundation. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 years into that, we were like, okay, we got this. And we started collabing on music again. And that second time was just magic because we just knew each other and we trusted each other and we could be honest with each other. And like, if I didn't like a lyric or if she didn't like some of my production, she'd be like, hey, I don't like that thing. Like, let's change it. And then we would. And it wasn't like personal at that point because we had that strong trust and foundation with each other. That's when Pomplamoose formed. And it was like bigger than anything either one of us had done. For whatever reason, that collaboration between us was different than any one of our personal things, and it really resonated with people.
I think that's so special when you can share something creative with your best friend and homie and partner.
Yeah.
Big fan of that.
Yeah, totally.
Moving on though, let's talk about the MySpace days.
Okay.
Because when I was a kid, that was one of the things that my parents were like, that's forbidden, blah, blah, blah. So of course I got one. That was such an exciting part of middle school for me. It was like MySpace and what's your MySpace song? So how did MySpace play a role in music for you guys? What was the transition like from MySpace to this crazy new platform called YouTube?
Yeah. So when I started, I graduated in 2006.
What school did you go to?
Stanford. And
oh, dude, you're smart. I didn't know that.
I don't know about that. They let me in somehow.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Okay. Okay.
When I finished, I wanted to go to film school. I applied to film school. I almost went to film school. At the last minute, I declined, and I was in a pop band, and so I wanted to be in the pop band. But that was the thriving days of MySpace, and so of course I was on MySpace, and I ended up like booking several tours, probably 4 tours, by just messaging bands who had a few more plays than me, and I'd say like, hey, I'll book a show, like I'll find the venue, I'll coordinate everything, we'll pay for everything, like can we just open for you? And you send 100 messages and maybe 4 bands respond and let you, open for them. And so we did that, and we ended up booking like, a few tours up and down the West Coast. But MySpace at the time, that was like how it was done. But for whatever reason, I didn't, like, it wasn't resonating with people. Like, I put songs up on MySpace and people didn't care about them.
Interesting.
People didn't listen. Yeah, I mean, I remember, I remember literally getting like 3 or 4 plays a day on MySpace and just feeling like I was talking to a black hole. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, one day I saw a cover. This guy was playing guitar and singing, and it was on this new site called YouTube. And he was like okay at guitar, but not like amazing. And he was okay at singing, but not amazing. And meanwhile, like I had spent 6 months on this EP and I like fully produced it and like learned mixing and engineering. And like it was, yeah, I put a lot of work into it. And I was toggling back and forth between like my MySpace page with three plays and this guy who's playing guitar and singing in front of a webcam and had like 300,000 views. And I was like, I'm uploading my shit to the wrong platform. Mm-hmm. And then I started posting videos on YouTube. Interestingly enough, I was the call to action at the end of the YouTube videos was go check me out on MySpace. Like I wasn't even amazing. I was thinking of YouTube as a way to advertise my MySpace page.
Right.
I mean, it was so silly back then. I didn't realize that would become the thing, but those videos and that music that I put on YouTube started getting all of the attention. And that's when I kind of was like, all right, forget this MySpace thing. I'm just putting all my eggs in the YouTube basket.
Yeah. So what was that like juggling so many things? Because you have your personal music,
uh-huh.
you have Jack the musician, the EDM artist as well. You have that
right.
side, you have Pomplamoose.
Yeah.
And Natalie as well, I was checking out her stuff. She has so many projects.
Yeah,
you know,
My Terrible
with
Friend,
just her.
The solo stuff.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
So you pre-Patreon, how yeah. were you juggling all that? Was it just music is life, music is everything, I'm going to do whatever I can to make this a thing, and it really wasn't like, oh, this is so hard? Or, I mean, what was that like, juggling so many projects?
Hard.
Yeah.
Hard and unfocused, and probably like very creative, which is like good because we just did whatever the hell we wanted and made lots of cool things. But you know, if I were doing it all over again, I might like focus a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just hindsight. But yeah, it was tough to juggle so many things. I mean, the work that I put into videos is astronomical. Like I kill myself when I make creative things. I put 110% of myself into things, and doing that with multiple projects at once, like it just, you can't maintain any one single project. So I think, you know, to be like totally honest and a little vulnerable here, like I think we could have done a little bit better than what we did, and we might have been able to scale one of those things if we had kind of focused more on one of those things. But you know, we were kind of divided. I'm glad all those different things exist, and so I have no regrets. But if I were, you know, if I were doing it all over again, I might kind of pick my thing and go gung ho on that.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I think helped me in the very beginning is I had all of these docuseries ideas.
Yeah.
And I saw things that were missing and I wanted to make, but I had my own personal YouTube channel with like 1,000 subscribers. But
yeah.
I was like, oh, I want to make this docuseries called Creative Space TV. I want like an MTV Cribs with Substance. Like,
yeah.
Who cares what's in the refrigerator? I want to see what they make music with, what they do videos with, you know, like that's the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And I started a new YouTube channel for it. And I was like, okay, this will be its own thing. But then once I had them done, I was like, okay, what is your goal, Sarah? I want to be a video maker, a filmmaker. I want the credibility. I want these things to give me credibility, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the best things that I did was I put all of the projects kind of underneath the umbrella of my name.
Yeah.
And I think that's what helped me. And I get that question a lot. A lot of people think that they need to go and create separate Twitter, Instagram, YouTube channel for
totally.
All like 5-10 things of their projects.
Totally.
And I think if the goal is to build you up as a musician or a filmmaker or anything like that, it is valuable to have it maybe go back to your name or your internet name or whatever that is. What are your thoughts on quality versus quantity in this age of clickbait and the Paul brothers and sensational content?
Yeah.
Because like you said, it took you a while to make the stuff you're making. And
totally.
That's quality.
Totally.
Not necessarily quantity.
Okay. Let's dive in. Let's have a real mm-hmm. conversation here, because I actually think this is really nuanced and weird to talk about, and I also think I'm probably So I've thought a lot about this. it's really fun to make high quality things and to dive in and to obsess over the details. And honestly, like, that is what brings me personal joy, is like nitpicking and grinding and like making something amazing. Okay. And there's a point past which, and here's where I think maybe a lot of people disagree with me. There's a point past which I think it's actually selfish to do that.
Hmm.
And it's, I'm not saying you shouldn't go for quality, because God knows, I mean, I spent 3 months on one video. So like, you know, I believe in high quality things. But like, I also have a mentality, I call it working to publish. Like, there's a point past which like only you care about these little things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not one of those artists that's like, I don't care what people think about my art. Like, I make art for me. Like, I'd be bullshitting if I said that.
Yeah.
Like, I make art because I want to have impact on the world. Like, I want to make people happy. Mm-hmm. I want to like bring people joy.
Yeah.
I want to like express myself and be understood and help people understand themselves. And like, I want to impact fellow humans.
That's what makes art fun.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like there's a point past which working on all those little things, while it's like personally satisfying, it's less, it becomes less about impacting fellow humans in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to like retrain my perfectionism to think more, think more about like, okay, does this really matter, or does it just matter to me? And because of that, I've been able to make more things. And you know, I think one story that I always fall back on is, if there's a great study that happened a while ago. The study was essentially, they asked a bunch of students, they had two groups of students. The one group, they said, okay, your job, this, quarter is to make the perfect pottery. And they gave it as much clay as you want. And here's the pottery wheel. Make the perfect pot. You have 3 months. As the kids would like, you know, try to make the perfect pot. The second group of students, they said, okay, your job is by the end of the quarter, you have to have made 1,000 pots. So who do you think made the best pots? It was always the kids in the second group.
Really?
The kids in the first group who tried to make the perfect pot spent forever on three or four pots, and they never got good at making pots. The kids who made 1,000 pots just got so good and were able to just be free and creative and try things and be nuanced and interesting. And they got really good at making pots.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've taken that mentality, I think, maybe to an extreme, to the point where I release 8 new music videos a month. And so this year I'm going to release 100 music videos and 10 albums. And like, my theory now, this year, one of my bands has already released 8 albums. So like,
I
am just trying to make 1,000 pots, at this point. So I guess, you know, I believe in high quality things, but I actually think the way to get to high quality things is with a little bit of fuck you and rock and roll and I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I think that helps you make really good quality, awesome things that resonate with people and are unique and interesting.
And in this day and age, especially with music, it only takes one song to pop off. And what if that one song is literally what you're questioning and spending all your time on, when you could just release it and like the rest could be history? And so it's when we have the tools to just make and post, you know, it's like, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
And totally. And you're right. Like, you can't, like you just said it, you nailed it. One song could just go big. And the thing is, you don't know which song that is.
Right.
My funk band, the one that's releasing 8 albums, you know, over the last year, we've had 4 videos that cracked 1 million.
Wow.
And like, it used to be really hard for me to make, like, if I were putting my all into one video to crack 1 million, like, you put it up and maybe it gets 100,000 views, maybe it gets 10, maybe it gets 50.
Right.
But like, that's not our mentality now. Our mentality is like, let's go into the studio and make a bunch of fun music that we love and is like imperfect and awesome, and put it out. And it actually has helped us make better things.
It's a weird thing.
I'm still getting used to it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. It's so fun for me to listen to people that are musicians and artists, because I feel like it's what I strived for.
Yeah.
But then I found, you know, my new passion in video, and now I'm very happy. I love making videos. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But when I was in high school, probably like a lot of kids, you know, you want to be a rock star.
Yeah.
I enjoyed guitar. I played a lot of guitar.
Yeah.
And I had my own band. We made an EP. We like toured. I lived in Dallas. So we didn't tour, but we played shows in like Deep Ellum on Sundays.
Yeah.
And would come back to school with X's on our hands because we were at so the club. Fun. As like 16-year-olds playing. And so it was such
that's a life though.
Yeah, man. It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was so fun. And no matter what I do, I love my life. It's so epic, but nothing compares to playing music live.
Yeah.
And no matter if there's just 5 people in the crowd or 50 people in the crowd, I also played at my church, which is like a mega church. So there was like 4,000 people in the crowd every weekend. So I'd play guitar there too. And no matter what it is or how many people are in the crowd, like playing live music is so special.
I know.
And the feeling of it, that's the only thing that I miss from it. Not the only thing, but the biggest thing.
Yeah.
So transitioning into this new phase of your life, you know, as the CEO of Patreon, is there like a tension there between artist Jack and CEO Jack? I mean, like, what is that like when you made that transition?
Yeah, no tension at all. It's been really easy.
Oh,
totally
yeah.
Painless. No, I'm
good. All right, let's end the podcast, guys. Thank you for tuning in.
that's been like the hardest thing.
Yeah.
So hard. Mm-hmm. Very emotional for me.
Yeah.
I'm already like a super emo person. And like, you know, all through my 20s, Pamplemousse was like a super indie rock. Like we got offers from major labels and we decided not to do that because we valued independence. And like, we kind of had like I think still have like a punk kind of mentality, but even though it's like cutesy fun indie rock music, mm-hmm. like it comes it's funny to say this, it comes from a place of like anger and like rebellion and like you know, we're like outside of the music industry and we feel separate mm-hmm. from all of that, and we own all of our own masters and we make mm-hmm. all our own, we have a direct deal with iTunes and we got, you know, it's like we had like all those things.
Yeah.
And so you know, I went through my 20s promising myself that I'd never be one of those musicians in their 20s who turns into a businessman in their 30s. Hmm. And here I am, 34, CEO of a tech company and making music on Saturday and Sunday once a month.
Right.
And like, and it's not, and the hard thing about it too is it's not because Pamplemousse wasn't successful. We were making a good living with Pamplemousse. Mm-hmm. It's, it's something else. And so, it's been like a big struggle for me. Mm-hmm. I'm
sure you had so many fans as well that were just like, just there for Music Jack and Pamplemousse and just make music, don't change, because a lot of the internet can be like that, which is, I think, the biggest struggle as a creator too, is you want to value the opinion of the audience, but at the same time, you've got to be you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, do you have people that are like, hey, what's up? Like music, but you're still putting out music. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go to my personal YouTube channel, like my EDM side, which really started to take off. I had something special was going on. Every time I put out a video, I get millions and millions of views. I could only make like one video a month, but like it was really starting to rock. And if you look at any of those comments on those YouTube videos, it's all like, Jack, come back. Like, I haven't posted a video on my solo channel since October of 2013.
Wow.
So like, you know, it's, I definitely miss it. And at the same time, like if I'm being totally honest, you know, and maybe this is just a life thing, but like you can't make promises to your future self in your 20s. Like that's just something I've learned. Patreon is the most, and this is hard for me to say, it's true. Patreon is the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm.
Sending creative people who I care about and have been following since like they were 15 and watching them turn 20 and 25 and buy a house, like being able to send those people checks every mm-hmm. month for being creative people when I know that for thousands of years, like, creative people have been oppressed mm-hmm. and like pushed to the fringes of society and screwed by companies and by mm-hmm. management teams and
college
by,
too.
And just like,
so you can't do it. You have to pick a responsible degree.
Like, to be yeah. able to enable those people to make a living doing, like, following their dreams and following mm-hmm. their passions and like to be part of this, like, rise. Like, there's a thing happening. There's a movement in the world right now around creative people being enabled and like using the internet to build small businesses and like people like you, right? Mm-hmm. People who are like full-time creative professionals in mm-hmm. a way that was impossible 10 yeah. years ago. Yeah. And that is the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life,
yeah.
being a part of that movement.
It's amazing.
And I wouldn't give it up for anything in the world. And I don't say that lightly because I feel like I was put on this earth to make music.
Yeah.
Like, it's in my soul. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely is a struggle for me. You know, mm-hmm. it's like I'm doing the thing that I want to be doing right now. I'm doing the thing that is the most rewarding thing in the world yeah. to me.
Well, and it's amazing that you are such a big part of that movement. So I went to school for electrical engineering and computer science for 3.5 years.
Okay, so of the two of us, you're the real smarty pants because I was a music major. So,
but basically it was out of the thing of, you know, I was good at math and science in high school, uh-huh. but I always had music on the side. I always had like video and creative stuff on the side, but yeah. I always had in my brain, that's not a profession. Like yeah. I cannot make money off of that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go have a responsible job as an engineer or, you know, coder or something. And I'll just do creative stuff on the side.
Yeah.
And it was when I was in those terrible college years that I was like so focused on video and music and figuring out what I want to do. Cause it really, doing something that you hate pushes you into what you love. I truly believe that.
Oh yeah.
And so those were the years that were so valuable to me because I was really searching and I was finding, which is so rewarding. Mm. So it's so cool that, like, I pinch myself every day. You know, the fact that I can meet people like you, talk to people like you, and at the same time encourage this next generation of people who are going to be creators and are going to be involved in every aspect of the world, which is so exciting, you know? Yeah. And I think going back to, you know, you transitioning from music and YouTube to Patreon, I think the companies that are the most successful in tech or in the world or business is it comes from a person with a need who's in it. Like yeah. you were in it yeah. and you're a musician, you're trying to earn money. And I think that's why Patreon is so successful is because you understood the problem. Like yeah. building a business is just solving a problem, right? Yeah. So So talk about
deep.
That. Yeah. Like yeah. what was that yearning that you had
yeah.
that spurred Patreon? And yeah. for the people who aren't super familiar, just kind of give a summary of what Patreon is as well.
Yeah.
And what made you
sure.
do it.
So yeah, Patreon, you're absolutely right. Patreon sprang from my, springed. Patreon springed.
English.
came from my own need. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was actually just talking about it this morning. Like I didn't want to start a company. I didn't want to be a CEO. I literally was anti that. Like I was promising myself that I wouldn't become a business person.
Yeah.
that was not in the life plan, not in the goals. It was an anti goal. and yet, you know, I was at this point where like, you know, the Petals video, which you mentioned earlier.
So good. Guys, look it up.
Like I put 3 months of my life into that. I drained my savings account. I maxed out 2 credit cards. I spent over 10 grand on this video.
Wow.
I worked with like a roboticist from the University of Tucson who built a 3D printed hexapod robot. And then a hobbyist animatronics guy from the UK who built this fully animatronic head that literally sang the lyrics to the song. Like I cranked on this video so hard. I built a replica of Millennium Falcon cockpit in my studio, like by myself, like all the crafts shit. It was so much work. But it was so fun. And, I uploaded this video. It got 1 million views. I uploaded a behind the scenes video. It got like 150,000 views. My fans saw how much I was like pouring into this. And I checked my ad revenue from this thing the next day. It was 1 million views and $166 of ad earnings.
Ugh.
And like, I can't even begin to explain how demoralizing that is as an artist. It's the fucking worst to feel like, look, I did my job. Like, I made something that really resonates with the community and that impacts people and that gives people joy and makes them feel excited and like they listen to every morning on their way to work. And like, I felt like I had made a good thing. And then to get paid $166 for that, especially when it cost me 10 grand, I just felt like, fuck this. Like, this sucks. We have to fix this, because not only is it happening to me, all the artists who put stuff on the web, you know, the web is a shell. It's empty. It's the artists who fill the web with the stuff that we love, with the music and the videos and the articles and, the podcasts. It's the artists who make the web lively, you know? They are the animals in the coral reef. They are the grass and the trees in the forest. Otherwise it's empty space. And to send those people systemically, to send them $100 for millions of views and for so much attention and interest is so fucked. I can't believe that that's the system that we've built on the web, that these are the companies that have won. The companies that have won are monetizing the web through attention and ad dollars. We've got to fix that as a society. And that's where Patreon came from. It came from that feeling of having a feeling that pain, that personal burn, and being like, this has to change. And so Patreon is essentially what we've done is it's a consumer payments platform. It's a membership platform that makes it really easy for creators to get paid. Fans can pay $5 a month, $10 a month, $100 a month. And the creator, Patreon only takes 5%. So the creator gets most of the money. And it's a way for those creators to make a living doing what they love. And it's a much better system. We end up paying people 50 or up to like 200 times what they make via ad revenue. So it's a way better like engine room to sort of finance the next version of the web. And that's what we want Patreon to be. We want it to be a better way for creators to get paid instead of having to rely on that $85 AdSense check at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's interesting, because on the whole AdSense thing, there's, the adpocalypse happened recently.
Yeah.
And so many things have been happening with YouTube. And it's interesting because it actually led me into a more healthy way of creating. But that's unique to me, because a lot of people make their living off of AdSense. I never made a ton of money off of AdSense.
Yeah,
but when it really, but when it really just kind of like it wasn't growing, it was actually decreasing. I was like, okay, how can I pivot a little bit?
Right.
How can I make less stuff but go back to quality?
Yeah.
And luckily I've been able to partner with brands that believe in my stuff. And so that's kind of how I monetize on YouTube, at least.
Yeah.
But Patreon is such a cool place, especially for, I mean, talk about some of the people who are on it, because you have people making like comics, you have podcasts, you have like everything, right?
Yeah. There's
who are some people that like people should go check out on Patreon?
Oh gosh. I mean, there are so many folks that some of my favorite people, like Amanda Palmer's on Patreon, and she's phenomenal. Such a good like community manager. And I think one of the things that makes her special is she's not, she doesn't confine herself to one medium, right? She's just an artist. So sometimes that manifests in writing. Sometimes it's music. Sometimes it's videos. Sometimes it's covers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's originals. But she's amazing. Go check her out.
Awesome.
There's a guy called Smooth McGroove who
Smooth
like...
McGroove.
I mean, it's like the reason Patreon exists. Like he lives with his cat in... I think
I already love it. You can stop right there. Yeah. I love cats.
It's just him and this little cat. His hair is down to his waist. He's got a beard down to his waist. He only does a cappella covers of video game music. His name is Smooth McGroove. And I forgot where he is. He's like in Omaha or something. And he has, over 1 million subscribers and just puts out this music that's like so unique and different mm-hmm. and cool and so like not something you'd ever see on MTV. But like that's why Patreon exists, is for people like that, you know, for people who are doing something different that's on the, you know, that's like unique and interesting, that like resonates with their community. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, there's podcasters, there's video creators, there's web comics and illustrators and all sorts of folks. Mm-hmm.
What is some raw and real, like non-fluff advice that you would give to creators out there who are thinking about Patreon? Like, oh, I can make money off of this.
Yeah.
But because I'll say this. So a lot of people will seek out advice from me about, you know, being a YouTuber, a content creator, filmmaker, whatever, and making money.
Yeah.
And instantly, I think people's reaction is like, oh, I'll just do Patreon, people pay me. But they, you know, maybe haven't done that much work, or they don't have an existent audience.
Yeah.
What is some advice that you give to people who are just starting out? Like, would it be to develop an audience on other platforms and find that audience? Or, you know, maybe there's a place where you could have five patrons. Is there a word, patrons?
We say patrons.
Patrons.
Like a patron of the arts.
Patron, that makes so much sense.
Or members. Yeah. Members. Patrons. Yeah.
You know, you could maybe have a few patrons and make it. So, I mean, what's some advice to those creators out there that need to find the balance of following your dreams, going big, but also like having, you know, sticking to what reality is, kind of?
Yeah, I think you just said it. Like the way I explain it, I haven't found a better word than this, and it sounds sleazy and awful, but there's a difference between audience building and audience monetization. Those are separate things. And I don't like saying audience monetization, because it just sounds so like I'm going to monetize my audience.
Right.
It's just like gross. but there is a difference between those two things. Audience building, as you mentioned, is like on the discovery platforms, on the SoundClouds, on the YouTubes, on the Facebooks of the world. It's like, and it's hard, like building an audience, finding fans, like essentially finding like product market fit is a tough challenge. And like most creative people don't get there. But you gotta get there first. Before you start talking about audience monetization, I think the trouble that people have is they dive into making money before they dive into making great art that resonates with communities. And like, the truth is, until you've like, it's not that until you've succeeded, because you never succeeded, but until you start to have some early signs that like, hey, you're onto something here, you're making something that resonates with people and that impacts people in positive ways, and they're giving you feedback about it and they like it and they want more.
You gotta make your 1,000 pots, right?
Yeah,
you gotta be in the dirt.
And that comes first. Mm-hmm. Like, until, like, if you start thinking about revenue generation and like brand deals and stuff before you've figured out the kind of art that resonates with communities, then you're never going to improve as an artist. And and so, yeah, I think it's really important. My advice would be focus on making great stuff that resonates with communities before you think about making money from it. And you know, for me, the way I did that was like very similar to how you did it. Like I was writing like corporate background music for like Google and like for their like in-house video production department.
Amazing.
And then like other commercials and stuff. I was just writing like
do whatever
composing.
You can. Yeah.
Yeah, and getting paid for that while I was learning how to write original songs and like building a community on YouTube. And if you can kind of invest in something that makes money, that builds your skill set while you're getting good at your art and making your 1,000 pots, that helps too. Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, how do I get the gear to be a YouTuber or whatever? And a lot of that for me personally was like, I was doing wedding films. It was awful. It like making wedding videos. Some people like it, but it is so, I don't want to say awful, but it's scary because it's like the person's most important day, right?
Yeah.
But that's where I really learned how to create really good stuff fast and to be able to, oh my gosh, the audio wasn't good there. So what can I do to, it's a really good way to problem solve and stuff. So it was wedding videos where I was getting paid decent money. So I was able to invest in gear and then do my side projects. Uh-huh. It was, you know, making anything and everything I could with video. And so whatever art you're doing, I think that's super valuable because you can make money off of it doing that medium, but sometimes it's not the funnest thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not all like rainbows and unicorns and stuff. So.
And if you're doing that, you're building your skill set and you're learning how to use Final Cut or Adobe Premiere and you're learning what kind of lenses look good on what sorts of cameras, and you're learning about like field recorders and how to do audio compression and like what microphones and what's the difference between a shotgun microphone and that's a condenser mic versus a dynamic mic, and all you're like learning the skills and the craft of audio and video production while you're need to build, you need to have that stuff in order to become a YouTuber. And if you can get paid while you're building those skills, that's awesome.
Who needs college, guys?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, that's a conversation for another time. But I'm very like, if you're a creative person, if you want to build a business, you don't need to pay $40,000 a year to do that.
Yeah, I think it's true now.
But wrapping up, I have to mention the thing, how you kind of came on my radar again was Casey Neistat. He's building this 368 thing, you know, super cool.
Yeah.
And that's a thing we have in common that I got because the start of my audience was with a viral Casey Neistat video.
Yeah.
That wasn't the start of your audience, but that's how you kind of came on people's radar recently.
Yeah.
So very quickly, just talk about like what got you motivated to make that video addressed to Casey. You want to be involved with 368. Talk a little bit about that because that was recent. That video has 2 million views. Mm-hmm. You hung out with Casey, you're in his office talking about maybe how you guys could collaborate.
Yeah.
What can we expect? Can you dish some deets?
Dish some high levels.
There we go.
I'll stay away from the deets. I wanted to I think the idea when Casey launched 368 and was talking about helping smaller creators, like I'm super passionate about that. You know, again, like my favorite thing is like sending creative people money. Like that gets me going. Mm-hmm. And so when he talked about that, I was like, I had to reach out and say like, let's figure something out. And I'm not sure. I actually don't know if that's going to go anywhere. If the partnership with Casey is going to go anywhere, probably not. I'm going to do something. Mm-hmm. And it's either launching later this year or early next year. I won't get into too many details, but what I will say is that it's going to be a thing for small creators. It's going to help, jumpstart, careers. It'll be a way for people to kind of quit their jobs and do what they love. Deets are coming soon-ish, depending on a few like legal and technical things that are still being worked out.
Amazing.
That's around the bend, and it's very similar to the vision that I pitched in that video. Again, I'm not sure if it's going to happen with Casey, but it's going to happen.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, guys, if you want to stay tuned with everything Patreon's doing and Jock, all of his links will be in the show notes below. And also, you know, you can listen to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, they're everywhere. But if you just have to see our beautiful faces and you need that full episode, you can now go to patreon.com/thecreativeexchange. It's actually patreon.com/my name. So Sarah Dietschy. There's so many cool things that I think we can do as the Peachy fam. So I didn't want to limit it just to the Creative Exchange. And I'm going to have different levels and stuff because one of the things that I used to do a lot on YouTube was live streams behind the scenes.
Totally.
Like, how do you do this? And so I think that's going to be also something that I'm going to include, exclusive live streams. You guys, we can get into the nit and gritty of just being a, you know, living your best creative life and all of that stuff. So all of those links will be in the description below. Jack, thank you so much.
Oh gosh, thanks for having me.
This has been such a good discussion.
Oh, so cool to like meet you and you know, hear about your career and development. Yeah. And yeah, thanks for the such thoughtful questions.
Yeah, hopefully this won't be the end. Let's do something in the future. I love it so much. Guys, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Comes out every single Monday. Maybe leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps a lot. But until next time, guys, stay peachy. And I'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
I'll listen to you in the next one.